Good evening. Thank you for joining us. Actor Alec Baldwin has remained mostly silent about the shooting on the set of his film Rust until now. He's speaking out to George Stephanopoulos in an ABC News exclusive. What he says happened that day.
Phones are off. Let me get a slate.
Marker.
Good.
Alec, thank you for doing this. I think the big question, and the one you must have asked yourself 1,000 times, how could this have happened?
All of what happened on that day leading up to this event was precipitated on one idea, and that is that Helena and I had something profound in common, and that is we both assumed the gun was empty, other than those, you know, dummy rounds.
Alec Baldwin is speaking out about the tragic incident that took the life of Helena Hutchins on the set of the film Rust, the low-budget Western, which he was both producing and starring in. It was the 12th day of a 21-day shoot.
That day, I did exactly what I've done every day on that movie.
Baldwin was preparing for one of his biggest scenes, a shootout inside this wooden church.
I'm handed a gun, and someone declares, they said, this is a cold gun.
Dave Halls.
The first AD. In my years on the sets of film, hot gun meant that there was a charge in there, and cold gun meant there was nothing in there. When he's saying this is a cold gun, what he's saying to everybody on the set is, you can relax. The gun is empty.
That's what cold gun means.
Well, cold gun means there's no charge in there. There could be dummy rounds.
A dummy round looks like a real bullet, but is completely inert, containing no explosive charge. Baldwin, director Joel Souza, and cinematographer Helena Hutchins were rehearsing the scene.
I'm holding the gun where she told me to hold it, which ended up being aimed right in below her armpit, was what I was told, I don't know. This was a completely incidental shot, an angle that may not have ended up in the film at all, but we kept doing this, and it was, so then I said to her, now in this scene, I'm going to cock the gun. And I said, do you want to see that? And she said, yes. So I take the gun, and I start to cock the gun. I'm not going to pull the trigger. I said, do you see that? She goes, well, just cheat it down and tilt it down a little bit like that. And I cock the gun. I go, can you see that? Can you see that? Can you see that? And she says, and then I let go of the hammer of the gun, and the gun goes off. I let go of the hammer of the gun, and the gun goes off.
At the moment.
That was the moment the gun went off, yeah. That was the moment the gun went off.
It wasn't in the script for the trigger to be pulled.
Well, the trigger wasn't pulled. I didn't pull the trigger.
So you never pulled the trigger?
No. I would never point a gun at anyone and pull a trigger at them, never. Never. That was the training that I had. You don't point a gun at me and pull the trigger.
And Hall's attorney told ABC News that he was watching and agrees that Alec did not pull the trigger and that his finger was outside the trigger guard.
911, what's the location of your emergency?
We need an ambulance out at Bonanza Creek Ranch right now. We've got two people shot on a movie set accidentally.
I'll connect you with medical dispatch. You don't need that.
The gun was supposed to be empty. I was told I was handed an empty gun. If there were cosmetic rounds, nothing with a charge at all, a flash round, nothing. She goes down. I thought to myself, did she faint? Was there a blank? Sometimes those blank rounds have a wadding inside that packs, it's like a cloth that packs the gunpowder in. The idea that someone put a live bullet in the gun was not even in reality.
Did you go up to her? Did you back away?
I went up to her, and then we were immediately told to get out of the building. We were forced to get out of the building. The medics came in. I mean, I stood over her for 60 seconds, and she just lay there kind of in shock.
Was she conscious?
My recollection is yes.
Director Joel Souza is also wounded, his shoulder hit by the same bullet that traveled through Helena.
When she went down, he went down, and he was screaming really loudly. And I thought, what is he screaming? What happened? Within 15 minutes or 20 minutes after that, the police arrived and took the church set and put the crime tape around it, the yellow tape, and forced us all to the perimeters of the parking area where we sat and waited. She was not taken out of the church for quite a while.
But nobody told you what happened?
No. No, it wasn't until I was in the police station, hours later. Finally, one of the police officers, at the conclusion of my interview, I was there for like an hour and a half or so, she takes her phone and she slides it across to me. She says, that's what came out of Joel's shoulder, a .45 caliber slug. It was a real bullet.
So you didn't know exactly how serious it was?
At the very end of my interview with the sheriff's department, they said to me, we regret to tell you that she didn't make it, she died. They told me right then and there. And that's when I went in the parking lot and called my wife. To talk to my wife.
How did a real bullet get on that set? That,
what I'm saying is, that's for a criminal investigation to solve. I have no idea. I have no idea. I take that back. I have some ideas, but that's not for me to say.
In the aftermath of the shooting, authorities are investigating how live rounds made it onto the New Mexico set. Baldwin says he placed his trust in Hannah Gutierrez-Reed. According to a search warrant executed this week, the young armorer told investigators she loaded 5 dummy rounds into Baldwin's gun before lunch and a 6th after, when the gun was retrieved from a safe. Gutierrez-Reed's attorney has said she has no idea where the live rounds came from. He raised the possibility that someone may have deliberately mixed live rounds in a box of dummies in an act of sabotage. Her attorney has said he believes the set was sabotaged. Do you believe the set was sabotaged?
Do I believe that the set was sabotaged? No, because I can't imagine how that would have been affected. I don't know how somebody would have done that.
The Santa Fe district attorney leading the investigation has said she does not believe sabotage is a possibility.
I know that some defense attorneys have come up with conspiracy theories and have used the word sabotage. We do not have any proof.
According to a search warrant, Assistant Director David Halls, seen in this IMDb photo, told investigators Gutierrez-Reed opened the firearm used by Baldwin, but Halls could only remember seeing 3 rounds and that he should have checked all of them but didn't, and couldn't recall if Gutierrez-Reed spun the drum. Halls also told investigators he didn't know there were any live rounds in the firearm. But his attorney has said it wasn't Halls' responsibility to confirm whether the gun was loaded.
I don't want to see anybody suffer unnecessarily. I feel terrible what's happened to Hannah. I do. I feel horrible what happened to Halls. I do. I mean, this is something where, as far as I'm concerned, someone put... The investigation's going to find out, but someone put a live bullet in a gun. A bullet that wasn't even supposed to be on the property. And this is the thing I hope that the sheriff's department doesn't give up on. Where did that bullet come from?
When the dust settled, Helena Hutchins, just 42 years old, lost her life.
She was someone who was loved by everyone who worked with and admired. Sorry. But admired by everybody who worked with her.
The Hutchins family has yet to file any lawsuits, but 2 crew members from the film have filed civil suits against production, including Baldwin, citing unsafe working conditions. In the month and a half since Hutchins' tragic death on the set of Rust, Baldwin says his life has become a recurring nightmare.
But I have dreams about this constantly now. I wake up constantly where guns are going off. These images have come into my mind and kept me awake at night.
Is this the worst thing that's ever happened to you?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because I think back and I think of what could I have done.
Your emotions are so clearly so right there on the surface. You felt shock. You felt anger. You felt sadness. Do you feel guilt?
No. I feel that there is, I feel that someone is responsible for what happened, and I can't say who that is, but I know it's not me. I mean, I honest to God, if I felt that I was responsible, I might have killed myself if I thought I was responsible. I don't say that lightly.
Baldwin now awaiting the outcome of the sheriff's investigation, hoping whatever it uncovers helps to ensure a tragedy like this never happens again.
I think it's important to remember that she was as admired as she was loved. That's essential to say that, is that she's someone who people really, really thought she had a great talent.
Our thanks to George. You can see the full show, Alec Baldwin Unscripted, streaming now on Hulu. Up next, reliving the pain, fear, and human triumph of the pandemic's first wave.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our 2 interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Wednesday night on ABC. Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 Central on ABC.
It was a time that those who lived through will never forget. The early days of the pandemic. A new documentary takes us to the front lines, giving us reason for hope.
It reached every corner of the world and changed us all.
I have to keep it together. I have kids who can't see me fall apart. He has to come home.
The first wave of the pandemic here in the U.S., bringing healthcare workers to their knees and patients to the brink.
It is because of you that we are going to make it through.
You are more than just a doctor.
The first wave was like definitely a tale of two cities. It was like a silence in New York. But like in hospitals, it was like chaos.
Now as the Omicron variant arrives in the U.S., we're nearly 2 years since the start of the COVID-19 crisis. And those on the front lines are the worst of it, now reflecting on the moments that changed them.
When we started chanting, I literally felt like my breath was stripped away. I also heard all the times my patients said, I can't breathe.
Their journeys are featured in an intimate new Nat Geo participant film, The First Wave, taking us inside one of the hardest hit hospital systems.
Guys, we need some help in here now.
Documenting the first 4 months of the pandemic. And the heroes at the center of it all.
What we've been doing here over the last number of weeks is extraordinary and special.
From your perspective, what's this film about?
I think the film's about many things. I originally went in to make this film to try to humanize and put a human face to COVID.
Last week, there were like maybe one, two.
The film follows Dr. Natali Duger, an internist working at Long Island Jewish in Queens, New York, the early epicenter of the pandemic.
Is this a COVID patient? Is this not a COVID patient?
At the time, little was known about the virus.
We are taught pattern recognition. And as of right now, there's no clear pattern.
What we were seeing inside there, it was hard to describe. And then no one else was seeing what we were seeing.
Matthew Heineman, the Oscar-nominated filmmaker behind Tiger and Cartel Land, the gut-wrenching moments that unfolded were intentional.
We certainly see people survive, but we also see people die. Why make the choice to be so raw in a number of places in this film?
Because that's the reality of what happened. Finding that balance in the edit room was extremely, extremely important. And I definitely didn't want to sugarcoat the reality of what we all went through.
As pain and loss mounted, a second crisis emerged. Following the death of George Floyd, tensions over racial injustice boiling over, the filmmaking team capturing unexpected raw moments.
Because I'm tired of seeing people like you in the hospital. I'm tired. It's not even worth it. Please, your family cares about you. Your family cares about you. Your family cares about you. Your family cares about you.
In my perception, he wanted to be acknowledged as the gentleman that he is, as that black man, that human being that's just trying to live his day to day. And for me, I just couldn't, my soul couldn't take any senseless harm to another black man.
The film is unapologetic, making the connection of the I can't breathe from what it meant on the streets of America and George Floyd of the world to what it meant in the hospital. I can't breathe.
When I first heard that line, I said, this can't be real. I was haunted by that phrase in the hospital. Those looks that the patients gave me of desperation, of anxiety. I saw what it looked like before someone passed away and saying, I can't breathe, I felt my soul crushed.
Don't beat yourself up.
The majority of Dr. Duje's patients, black, brown, and immigrants.
For me, I couldn't breathe. And then hearing, you know, I can't breathe, it's hard for me to swallow.
Ahmed Ellis, a 36-year-old NYPD school safety officer and first-generation American, was brought to Dr. Duje's hospital after contracting COVID. During his 44-day stay, he was intubated twice.
Oh, gosh.
His wife, Alexis, allowing cameras to capture each excruciating moment of their journey.
I knew he was so sick. I thought maybe if the cameras were in there, that they would give him the best treatment. Yeah, I was just grasping at whatever to try to get the best care for my husband.
Once upon a time, there was a little daddy named Daddy. He took a walk, found Mommy.
Isolated in the hospital, the love from his wife and children giving him fuel to keep fighting.
I'll say my darkest day just being there alone, not having anybody. I look forward to a FaceTime call every day and FaceTime with them because that's all I had.
Hi, Daddy.
What's up?
Hi, Daddy. Say hi, Daddy. Could you say hi?
After a month and a half in the hospital,
nice.
Med finally regained enough strength to go home.
Okay. You're fine.
That was a great day. One of the happiest days of my life.
His family cherishing every moment together. In the months following that first wave, much has changed for those featured in the film.
I had to resign as a full-time physician because despite me loving what I do when I can do it fully and wholly and really get to work with my patients, mentally, the flashbacks are real. The PTSD is there.
While the film makes clear the courage of healthcare workers, patients, and families, it also pays homage to an often unheralded superhero, the human spirit.
I think there's no question that we've all been changed forever. And so, of course, there are difficult moments in this film. But I also think there's just a lot of love and beauty and humanity.
It is truly emphasizing the human spirit and what it can endure and how it can be better, and then to fight for that. So this film, it's life.
You can watch the full Nat Geo documentary, The First Wave, streaming on Hulu December 5th. Nat Geo is owned by our parent company, Disney. Up next, The Porch Pirate with No Shame. And finally tonight, a woman in Connecticut lost a package to a porch pirate recently, and she caught the critter red-handed, a possum doing a quick grab of the gold hoops that she had been waiting for. No word on whether the four-legged bandit plans to re-gift them. That's Nightline for this evening. Catch our full episodes on Hulu. We'll see you right back here at same time tomorrow. Thanks for the company, America. Good night.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt
the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.